If you have a smartphone, I'm willing to bet that part of the reason you have it is to stay connected with people. And yet, it might be doing the very opposite. My guest today is Dr. Darren Whitehead, and Darren is here to talk with us about our digital devices and the rise of anxiety and loneliness. That's today on The Truth and Our Trauma. Ever sit down to pray and end up thinking about what you need to buy at the store instead? No judgment. I've totally been there. And that's why I decided to create the Ignite Strategic Prayer Planner and Journal. Know what to pray, track your impact, and learn to hear God's voice for yourself. Ignite is more than just a journal. It's a journey. And it's available now on Amazon and at the link in the show notes. I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but back in 2020 during the COVID lockdowns, I had something of a personal meltdown. Really, what was at the root of this meltdown was the fact that I had a lot of emotional stuff that I wasn't really dealing with, and it was because I had a distraction that I could reach to. With everything shut down and all the opportunities to socialize pretty much cut to a minimum, I really experienced an increase in anxiety. It was during this period of time that I realized just how much I was clinging to my phone to give me a sense of connectivity, and yet also realized how it was making my anxiety worse. My guest today is Dr. Darren Whitehead, and Darren is here to talk with us about our digital devices and how very often, instead of working for us, they're working against us in many ways. That being said, Darren has a fantastic strategy for helping you figure out where a device might actually be causing you more trouble in your life and what you can do to get the joy back. Darren, it is so great to have you with me today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I'm delighted to be here.
Darren, I talk a lot about relationships on the show. And one of the things that we often use, we think we're going to use to stay connected in our relationships is a digital device, a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And yet, in your new book, you talk about the fact that sometimes these devices are actually not working for us as much as they're working against us, right, and how that can actually contribute to the epidemic of loneliness actually that we're seeing in our country. Can you talk more to the fact that this thing that we're hoping is going to help us stay connected might be doing the opposite thing?
Yeah. So it's no secret that these smartphones have seeped their way into our lives, you know. And the iPhone was invented in June of 2007. And so it's been with us a while now. And before that, there was the BlackBerry, or the people call it the CrackBerry, or the Trio. So, you know, technology has quickly evolved, but especially with the smartphone. The smartphone is like a before and after moment. And it didn't begin with all of these distraction apps on there. It didn't begin with social media. It didn't begin with all of these games, and it didn't begin with dating apps and all of these kind of things. These were all introduced as time went on and we simply adopted them, right? And I think that social media is particularly problematic when we have that degree of access to it all the time. When you are pulling up at the lights and you open Instagram and you start scrolling on reels, we all know that this is not a good thing for us. And generally, social media is to our lives and our relationships like what fast food is to our nutrition. You reach for it to soothe you almost, and yet afterwards you don't feel great, and it doesn't bring ultimate nutrition to your body. In fact, it actually hurts your body, and particularly over the course of time. So if you're feeling lonely and you choose to use your phone to feel less lonely by looking at what your friends are doing, it generally does the very opposite of what you're hoping it would do. You learn about parties and events that you didn't get invited to. Everyone is presenting a highlight reel of their lives. So your life looks terribly mundane and boring compared to the highlight reel of someone else's life. You compare what you know of your own life with what you don't know of their life. You're not experiencing any of the anxieties that they experience day to day. You're only experiencing your own. And so you end up comparing your life with someone else. You end up watching events that you didn't get invited to or you got left out of. And instead of you feeling more connected because you know what's happening in people's lives, you actually feel more rejected or more lonely or more inadequate, because instead of living your life, you're watching other people live the highlight reels of their lives. The outcome of this, like fast food, you feel less healthy. You feel sick. You feel shame. And it cultivates unhealth. It cultivates loneliness. It cultivates a shallowness in relationship. And there wasn't research on this until fairly recently. You know, social media, particularly social media on a smart device, which of course gives you, in terms of frequency, an opportunity to visit something 50, 60, 70 times a day if you want, as opposed to looking at MySpace on a desktop computer once a day. That's a very different experience, right?
Oh, so, MySpace.
yeah. MySpace reference, right? So the data is now quite conclusive that social media use, frequent social media use, particularly through the access point of a smartphone, has caused depression to escalate. It's caused loneliness, people reporting loneliness, to be at the highest levels than it's ever been. And then less anecdotal things, things like people cutting themselves or even suicide is up dramatically and is correlated very closely with the invention and adoption of the smartphone.
The thing I think is actually so insidious about the smartphone too is that it feels actually like a pseudo connection. It right. feels like when I picked this thing up, I did make a connection. Even if I feel terribly about it afterwards, I still feel like maybe I'm more connected in a way, at least intellectually, I think maybe that I am. And I see this even with texting, for example. We think that because I had a text exchange with somebody, that was a meaningful interaction. But we know that the way we engage with people on a text, for example, can be so misconstrued.
That's right.
Where it can be even more difficult to communicate rather than just picking up the phone and having a conversation with someone. And it leaves us then confused, because then we're kind of going inward and thinking, well, I am connected with people. I am keeping this thing to stay connected. But at the same time, now I feel like there's stuff that's wrong with me every time that I try to connect, right?
That's right. Or even, and I see it happen with my children. I have three teenage daughters. And the narrative that they are able to overlay a text exchange, even if someone hasn't responded for a few minutes, you know? And so they send a text and then they don't respond and they're just waiting. And I'm like, babe, they could have just got called for dinner. And they put and their parents said, put your phone away. You know, like, you don't know what is going on. Like, they could be driving a car. They could be like, there's so many other rational explanations other than overlaying a worst possible anxious scenario. I've said something and now this person is thinking this and they're not responding yet. So, and it's the challenge. We were made to have embodied conversations. We are supposed to be incarnational creatures. We're in the presence of one another. And so that most communication is nonverbal. And when you are not in the space of someone, then your perception of what they are communicating is limited. So we were designed to be in full body. The next, of course, is what we are doing right now, where we can see one another's expressions. We're not in the presence of one another, but we can still read one another's body language and their expressions on their face. And if they say something that is sarcastic, we can see a smile rather than the fact that they mean it hurtfully. A phone call, then, you can hear the inflection in someone's voice. If you reduce it even more, an email is a little bit more like a letter sort of format, but a text message is just a couple of characters. And we were made to try to interpret the intent that is behind those characters. And we don't simply have enough information. And so generally what we do is we overlay worst case scenarios to these exchanges.
I think this really highlights the point you're making too about the fact that the relationships are become really shallow that we're able to even have through these devices. And one of the points you make in the book is the fact that loneliness is not really even that much about the access to relationships. You can have people all around you and be lonely, but yes. It has so much more to do with this quality, this depth or the lack thereof, that that's where that experience of loneliness comes from. Yes. And when we're talking about this text exchange, even that it's like, you know, again, we're trying to overlay when we have no idea what's going on the other side, but then also we're not usually super boundaried, I'll say, about when and if we do respond. And so sometimes we're responding off the cuff. And so we're actually doing damage in our relationships because we're responding at a time that, you know, before phones, you know, BP, that people wouldn't have even been able to get to us.
That's right. And not only that, but to a similar point, the presence of these things dramatically impact our relationships as well. Simon Sinek has got a bunch of research that he has cited recently about this. And he even gives like an object lesson. He says, if I'm talking to you and I'm holding this thing in my hand, like, how does that change the dynamic of this conversation? Whether it is implied or stated, generally not stated, but you have this sense of like something at any given moment can interrupt me that's going to be more important than this conversation. And he cites research saying that even like if you're having lunch with someone, even the presence of a phone on the table will prevent a relationship from going or a conversation to go to the depth that it would have gone, because you are subconsciously knowing that at any moment here, you could be sharing your heart and it could be interrupted by something that seemingly is more important. Maybe the most tragic of all is those of us who are parents, and I've done this, where my child is sharing something with me and I don't perceive it to be as important or I don't feel like this is a terribly meaningful conversation, or maybe it is. And out of habit, I just can't help myself. And they're sharing something and my phone buzzes and I pull it out of my pocket because I can't resist it, right? I pull it out of my pocket and I'm like, keep talking. And I glance at it. Like, that is very damaging to the level of intimacy and trust that you would have, because you're essentially saying this interruption and me seeing what this is more important than you sharing your heart with me. And no parent wants to convey that. And most of us have done that.
I think that unintentionality is often more damaging than we even know. If we even think about our own experiences of upbringing and places where all of us have different sorts of perspectives where we come from yeah. our upbringing and the relationships we had with our parents. And in some cases, even you could have had the best intended parents, but even the best intended parents that when that lack of intentionality to connect is there can create that damage, and how much more those opportunities exist because we have this distraction device with us 24/7.
One of the most heartbreaking examples that I have heard of that, which I'd never even thought of until my friend Jenny Black talked to me about this. She talked about the fact that nowadays it's sort of normal for mothers who are nursing their infants, nursing their babies, to instead of eye contact and focus and speaking to your child, they are nursing and scrolling. And instead of all of this connection that's supposed to be taking place, they're instead, I mean, I didn't nurse, at least not, you know, with a bottle, you know, but it's boring, right? It's boring.
Right.
It takes forever. It's the middle of the night. It's boring. But you think about the unintended consequences. And honestly, most mothers, when you say this, most young mothers who have done this have never once thought about the impact of that. And they feel awful about it. And this is one of the unintended consequences of the adoption of this technology and the impact on society and possibly, Michelle, the impact on bonding between mothers and children. My goodness.
And I think it is really important to recognize these things, Darren, because when we see them, then we have the ability to say, what could we do differently? you know, okay, this is a problem, and to levels that maybe we've never even really thought about.
Yes.
But I think it starts with understanding what is compelling me. Why am I reaching for this thing when I need connection? Why am I reaching for it? What is the thing that I am trying to medicate? What is beneath this drive that makes me feel even the responsibility, like I need to make sure this thing is with me in my pocket everywhere that I go?
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of research on this now as well. And again, I always like to say to people, like, give yourself grace, because there wasn't research on this. You know, like, these things have come in, we've all adopted them, and now there's been some time to be able to measure the impact of this technology on society, on relationships, on the way that we process and mental health and so forth. But generally, what people do is when you have an unpleasant feeling, so a surge of anxiety, you feel afraid of something, you feel regret about a certain situation, you feel ashamed of yourself, you feel embarrassed. All of these feelings, which we all have, are very unpleasant. And so what we can do is we can grab a device and we can look at visual candy of some sort. We can immediately distract ourselves and not have to feel that feeling anymore. So instead of these feelings having a natural working their way through us, these feelings all get stuffed. So I feel ashamed about something, I feel anxious about something, and I grab my phone and I just start reading the news, even, you know, or playing a video game or whatever it may be. I stop feeling that feeling. And what can happen is that these feelings can really actually compound inside of us, because we don't deal with these things in real time. We just keep stuffing them. And what we see now is a rise of a whole new generation of particularly children having panic attacks. And some believe that this is in part because people are living their lives so numb all the time. Instead of feeling feelings, they're numbing themselves, they're distracting themselves, they're stuffing all these feelings, and eventually at some point, you hold a beach ball underwater for long enough, eventually this thing is coming up. And sometimes it comes up in extreme anxiety or a panic attack, and we're seeing more and more, or in depression, and we're seeing more and more of that as well. But generally, it's covering over unpleasant feelings, and most of us can even do it for unconscious, it's unconscious behavior. So for example, I like to encourage people to think about their phones in two categories, distraction and utility. So distraction apps are things like social media and news and email and games and shopping apps and YouTube, the things that you end up like staring at your phone for a long period of time. The other kinds of apps and functions of your phone are utilities. So you have a calculator and it's a phone, right? You can call people, you can text people, you can use a calendar, you can use a flashlight. I mean, the smartphone has single-handedly put entire industries out of business. But there are very noble reasons to be using your phone, very functional, very utilitarian reasons to be using your phone. Like, I'm about to get dressed, what's the weather outside? And so you grab your phone and you look at the weather. What happens from there is often where the problem lies. Because without even thinking about it, you're like, oh, there's my Instagram app. I'm just going to hit on that. And then I'm going to look. And then you just start looking at interesting content that the algorithms have designed specifically for the things that you are most likely to get distracted by. And then there is just a limitless, unending flow of that. And so we pick up our phones for good reasons often, and we stay on them for very destructive reasons.
I think one of those negative feelings that you're talking about too, or negative experiences even, is that sense of boredom.
Boredom.
And yes. Boredom is a place where if we maintain a tolerance for it, processing can happen, creativity can happen, connection can happen. All sorts of actually really great things come from boredom, right? But yeah, we've gotten as a society though to the point where our tolerance of boredom, even in the content we are looking at, is very low.
Yes. Yeah. Dr. Felicia Wu Song, who wrote a book called Restless Devices, talks about the fact that boredom stimulates a completely different part of your brain. And so it like fires synapses in certain parts of your brain that are consistent with creative ideas and problem solving and lateral thinking. And like, so boredom is actually supposed to be a gateway toward creativity. And if we prevent ourselves from ever having any sense of boredom, and we now have a generation of people, right, who have an intolerance to boredom. And so any sense of it, you quickly need to entertain or distract yourself. And you think about all the things that are not happening because no one is going through the gateway of boredom, which is the gateway toward all of these very productive things.
Okay, this one is for all my overthinkers out there. I used to be absolutely debilitated by intrusive thoughts. Everything from constant worry to just dread of the future, I couldn't make it stop. If you're there right now, I have developed a free downloadable guide to help you get your mind back. It's called Overthinking: Get Out of Your Head and On with Your Life. And you can download it for free right now at uncommonvalor.co. Karen, this tendency in us, though, to gravitate towards distraction when we are anxious or when we have these negative feelings, this is part of the human condition.
Yes.
What does scripture point to as far as this tendency and how we need to be both aware of it, but guard against it?
You know, when we get anxious, most people move to what is called hyperarousal or hypoarousal. And what that means is you either move toward angst or apathy. So angst is where you start spiraling or you start getting agitated and afraid and you lash out at people or whatever. That's one. The other is that you just like, I don't care anymore. And I want to lay on the couch and I just want to watch Netflix and everyone leave me alone, you know? And so Jesus says, to those who are feeling anxious, Jesus says, cast your cares on me. So the practice that I would encourage people is in real time when you're anxious, Jesus, I am worried about this thing and I am consciously giving it to you right now in this moment. I am casting my cares on you. And I pray that you will sustain me, that you will strengthen me. Do that in real time. When you're feeling apathetic, I would encourage people to think through, like in Philippians 4, where do not be anxious for anything, but you've got to bring your prayers and petitions with thanksgiving, and the peace of God will calm your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So one of the keys in that is thanksgiving. One of the things that will break you out of apathy is gratitude. Like, God, thank you for what you've given me. So if you're feeling apathetic, if your heart is feeling numb, if you are feeling flatlined, the way out of that is gratitude. So I would encourage people to be casting or thanking, depending on how they're experiencing the anxiety that they're going through.
What you just described, I think, is so central actually to the process of faith formation in a recovery journey, in a healing journey, that these negative emotions that we are experiencing, they have real roots. There's pain and there's brokenness. And there are all kinds of ways, that, especially maybe in the past, that we've tried to medicate in other ways. We're talking about devices, but of course, there's a variety of other ways that we're trying to manage the feelings that are just too much sometimes.
Yes.
But it is this very intentional, as I feel it in the moment, every single day, hours and multiple times a day of turning to the Lord over and over and over. And sometimes it feels like, oh, this is not working. But at the end of the day, it has a compound effect. And then ultimately, to the extent where our pain and all of that stuff we recognize that it's being witnessed. We recognize that the Lord is actually with us, that when people tell us we're not alone, we start to say, wow, there might actually be something to this, right? But it's recognizing, even as we're talking about in this conversation, the device is also one of those things that you're going to have way more of a tendency to reach for than you even know when you are stirred up that way. And but then becoming aware of it and choosing to deny that inclination is where so many things can then just where that relationship between us and the Lord can flourish in those places of pain as it is supposed to.
Yes, I agree. Amen to that.
Darren, when it comes to a digital fast, this is something that this is the topic of the book that you just released. How does approaching a fast of a device help us to see the problems that we don't know that we have, but then also to seek out the solutions for the things that we really do need?
You know, it's funny, Michelle. When I ask people, have you ever done a digital detox or a digital fast? Almost every single person says the same thing. No, but I need to. And so we encourage people that a digital fast looks like a number of different things. First of all, that you would turn the notifications off of your phone. Just by doing that, I think I read that the average teenager receives 65 notifications every single day. So this is 65 every time you're looking down at your phone. So first of all, turn all the notifications off of your phone. Certainly let it ring. So you can ring, you can let text messages come through or not. You can check those when you want to check them rather than interrupting everyone. The second thing is don't have your phone by your bed. Don't use it. Everyone says to me, well, I use my phone as an alarm clock. And I know this is a very, very difficult problem to solve, but maybe buy an alarm clock, you know? And the problem is that many, many, many people, most people, the last thing that they look at before they go to sleep and the first thing that they reach for in the morning is their smartphone. And if you've got email on your phone and overnight 15 emails came in, it's like you barely got your eyes open and you're already in your inbox. You're already at work, you know. This stuff just can't be healthy for us as human beings. As we're experiencing life. This is not the way we were designed to live. So the second thing is don't have your phone in your bedroom. And then the third thing is you want to make your smartphone dumb. And so anything that is a distraction app, take it off for 40 days. So no social media, no news apps, no games, no internet browser, no email, no shopping apps, no video apps. Like get anything that's going to make you stare at your phone and get it off of your phone. And as you were talking about a little earlier, like the challenge is that so much of this behavior is unconscious. And what a digital fast does is it takes a measured amount of time and makes it conscious. You all of a sudden become conscious. I am in the middle of doing a digital fast right now, and I am as prone to have a problematic relationship with the digital technology as anyone. And I still find myself grabbing my phone and opening it and then quickly realizing, oh, that's right, I've got nothing cool to look at on my phone anymore. But I still grab it to do it, you know? And it might be because I had an unpleasant feeling of some sort and I just wanted to distract myself, but I have nothing distracting. I don't really doom scroll on the Chipotle ordering app, you know? I play with my calculator, you know, like there's not anything cool. And in addition to that, my phone is on grayscale. And when I look at my phone, what flashes through my mind, Michelle, is that my phone is not in color. And the world is. The world is in color. Who knew? The world is beautiful and it is in full color. And my phone is not the world. And so my phone is in grayscale. And it reminds me that what is beautiful is to be experienced out here, not in this glowing rectangle. And then the fourth thing that I would encourage people to do, and people do this in different ways, but you either limit or you eliminate all other screens for 40 days. So that can mean not watching any TV for 40 days. And some people do that. Truthfully, the most problematic part of our relationship with digital technology is the smartphone. It's these devices. It's less about watching television. But you will get the maximum impact of getting a total digital detox of a fast by eliminating all screens. And then the idea of a fast, just like the idea of a food fast, is that it is not just turning something down, it is turning something up. It is turning up the voice of God. And so with the time that you are not watching cat videos, you can now actually devote towards God's word and a conscious desire to be turning toward heaven and saying, God, what is it that you want to say to me? How do you want to speak to me today? And as I turn down the noise, as I turn down the clutter, as I turn down the distraction, would you turn up your voice? And would you make me more aware of what you want to say to me and give me ears to hear and eyes to see what you would want to say to me?
And this is so powerful, even if it is the extent of the fact that I'm not consumed by this thing and this like alternate world, this alternate reality, this alternate life, that I am being present in the presence of God. And just, I was having this thought today. I was just sitting quietly with the Lord and it was like, in your presence is the fullness of joy. And this is where the joy of missing out comes from. This is, as you call it, the JOMO. But that in being present with the Lord and in creation and in our real actual lives and being able to be present for it, there actually, I have found, comes this sort of defiant joy that comes out of, I am not doing what everybody else is doing. No, I'm sorry, you cannot reach me because I am busy right now and I will get to you when I get to you, like we did back in the day.
back in the 90s, right? Yeah. And what's amazing is that we all know that these devices are having a detrimental impact on our mental health. Like no one said they're not. We all know that, except that because of FOMO, we don't want to get off because of the fear of missing out. We don't want to get off of Facebook because we're not going to know what people are doing or that they had a birthday or that, you know, they had a beach trip, or we don't want to be left out of all of this. And so what we have found as a church is that, by the way, social scientists call this a collective action problem. A society at large is taking collective action and is problematic. And we all know it's problematic, but we all feel stuck to be continually in this cycle. And so if you do a digital fast as a family or as a small group or as a church, it's actually easier to do because you do it together. So my family and my church is doing this right now. And so you move this to the forefront of the conversation. Instead of you being the only one that is not on anything right now, you're all not on. You know, like my kids and my kids' friends all have social media off of their phones right now. And they're all so glad. Like they've almost gamified it. It's a sport. They're all like, this is good. So collective action problems can be solved with collective action in communities. And man, I would love for Christians and for Christian parents to be leading the way in this, be leading the conversation in this. There's so much research right now that has just recently come out that is talking about the damage to teenage girls if they experience puberty with social media. So the leading social scientists now are saying that no kid should have social media before the age of 16. And of course, it can be damaging after 16 too. But going through the puberty years, it's damaging for boys and girls, but especially girls. Going through the puberty years with social media is very, very destructive. And I would love for the fact that if Christian parents were leading the way and going, all right, this wasn't clear before, but it's clear now, and my kids aren't going to be having social media 16. So when your kid comes home and says, well, I'm the only one that doesn't have social media, like, actually, that's not true, because I know their parents and they don't either. And we can take collective action to do something about this. So I encourage, as you just said, that instead of FOMO, we would have JOMO. Instead of the fear of missing out, we would experience the joy of missing out. Because it's a better life.
It is a better life. 100%. Darren, I am so grateful for your insight and the time that you spent to sit down with me today. Would you tell listeners about your book, where they can find it, and how they can follow you after their fast is done?
Yes. So you can go to thedigitalfast.com, and I've got a bunch of information there. There's links to how to buy the book. We're on Amazon. You can buy the book in bulk at a drastically reduced rate if your church wants to go through it and you all want to go together. The book is in a couple of different parts. It makes the case for what this technology is doing to us from a scriptural standpoint, from a science standpoint. It describes what a digital fast is. It then gives 40 days of devotionals that will guide you through the different parts of a 40-day digital media fast. And then it closes with this idea of what would it look like as you reintroduce some forms of these distraction apps back, and which ones are you going to let back in and which ones aren't you going to let back in. We talk about Marie Kondo, and she talks about how you clean out your closet and you look at every item of clothing and you ask, does this spark joy or not? And so when you come out of your digital fast, I would encourage you to ask yourself, putting Instagram back on my phone, does that spark joy or not? Putting TikTok back on my phone, does it spark joy or not? If it doesn't, then don't put it back on your phone. You can still use some of these platforms in other ways, on a desktop, on a laptop, on an iPad, but not having them within arm's reach all the time will drastically change the way that you interact with these platforms. And so one of the things for me, just personally, I did not put social media back on my phone. And it's not that I'd never go on it, but I just don't go on it 68 times a day because it's not there anymore. And if it is there, I will. I just don't. So I take it off because it's a better life. So thedigitalfast.com, the book is called The Digital Fast, and you can pick one up and you can join the revolution, join the resistance. We're going to have more of a healthier relationship with these devices. We try to take back our lives from the smartphone.
Absolutely. And I will include a link in the show notes as well to make it easier for listeners to find the book. But thank you so much again, Darren.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for being with me for this episode today. I hope you'll come back again. And in the meantime, you can follow me over on social media and find out about our resources and services over at uncommonvalor.co.